It's a healthy lady.
That was the Save Children. That was the rubber duck.
The Transportation Conference Committee will come to order. Today we have Commissioner Michael Campion here to speak on behalf of the Governor's Office in relationship to a few of the provisions that are in our bill. First, members, let me state clearly and for the record that if a certain association that lobbies on behalf of motorcycle safety in this state continues their press to try to derail primary seat belts, the Senate will hold hearings on motorcycle helmets every year until it's enacted. Now, that's a very strong message to the motorcycle community. I would hope that you would get on board with primary seat belts, or you may wear brain buckets for the rest of your motorcycling career. With that, Commissioner Campion, if you would come to the table, and welcome to the committee.
Helmets. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pleasure to be here.
Well, thanks, Commissioner. We appreciate you taking the time to come down today and talk to us for a little bit. Yesterday we had some conversation with the Governor's Office in regards to the three primary safety provisions that are in our bill. And we were told that you can have two, but not three. And I would like to know what your feelings are on that and what the rationale behind that statement from the Governor's Office.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I guess for the record, Michael Campion is my name. I'm the Commissioner of Public Safety. You have a difficult decision, obviously, in front of you, and I would say from a public safety, not a Department of Public Safety standpoint, but generally speaking, the safety of Minnesotans, that what you have in front of you really is some historic traffic safety legislation that will be tremendously impactful to the citizens of Minnesota. There are three provisions. The Department of Public Safety has prioritized those three provisions, those three pieces of legislation, primary seatbelt being the first, graduated driver's license the second, and booster seat being third. We have prioritized those three measures in that fashion because of the impact that those three pieces of legislation will have. Primary seatbelt will have the most impact. It will save the most amount of lives. It will reduce serious life-altering crashes the most of any of those three pieces of legislation. The second is the graduated driver's license. Minnesota leads, I think, the nation, or is one of the leaders in the nation, in teens who die in crashes. Clearly, we are one of four states that don't have some form of a graduated driver's license. Second in order is graduated driver's license because it will save the most amount of lives. Third is a booster seat legislation. That's not because we don't think children are important, clearly, but it will have less of an impact than the other two. In the last, since April 18th, 18 Minnesotans have died in automobile crashes here in the state of Minnesota. As of, for instance, 14 of them did not have a seatbelt on. If we had those three provisions, certainly a large number of that 14 deaths would have been saved. One or two of those deaths were children of two or three years old. So the three pieces of legislation will have a wide impact on saving Minnesotans' lives, and we are in favor of literally of all three from a public safety perspective. What I think is most important for this committee, and my response would be that this committee work in a bipartisan fashion to pass whatever can be passed, agreed upon in this body, and send a piece of legislation to the governor that the governor can sign. It's a bipartisan piece of legislation, whatever that may be, certainly with that priority in mind, and provide the opportunity to sign some, again, as I characterize, some historic legislation in terms of traffic safety.
Chair Horton.
Mr. Campion, I was wondering why then we have this sort of Sophie's choice of transportation policy being presented to us. At 11:20 last night, we find out that we should adopt two of the three provisions, but no direction on which two. So on the good ship Palenti, we have three lifeboats. Actually, we have two lifeboats. And what I'm asking is what's painted on the side of those lifeboats, adults, teens, or children? And why do we have to make a choice? Why are there two lifeboats? Why are there not three lifeboats?
Madam Chair, I wasn't part of that discussion last night at whatever time it was. I can't comment on a discussion that I didn't have any part of. I've talked to the governor's office this morning. Clearly, I think that my comments here this morning are reflective of what the governor's office is aware I'm going to say, and it is a consistent prioritization, a consistent message. I think that we've taken since the beginning of this legislation, actually probably a couple of years ago, looking at the all three pieces of legislation, actually four, including the text messaging provision. And again, we prioritize in that manner because clearly the most impactful is going to be primary seatbelt.
Chair Horman.
Mr. Campion, I understand the prioritization, and I understand saving the most lives possible. What I don't understand is the exclusion of one of them. And what I don't understand is the public policy making by whisper in the hallway. We have a very public process. We have hearings on bills. We have members of the Department of Public Safety, members of the administration who weigh in at hearings. At every hearing along the way, we have heard that if a primary seatbelt is put on the governor's desk, he will sign it. If graduated driver's license is put on the governor's desk, he will sign it. If booster seat legislation is put on the governor's desk, he will sign it. Now, 11:20 last night, somebody whispers to Senator Murphy in the hallway, and it's not that I doubt his credibility, but if I were a judge, I would rule the evidence inadmissible in a court. There's nothing in writing. Nobody spoke to it. But suddenly, we are supposed to take a major safety provision out of a conference committee report on 11:20 at night on May 5th. It seems to me a very odd kind of reasoning that can go behind that sort of an ultimatum or directive or whatever it was that was whispered in the hallway. So I guess I don't understand why the exclusion. I understand the prioritization. I don't understand the exclusion starting at 11:20 p.m. May 5th.
Madam Chair, I'm not going to try to make excuses or explain away 11:30 whispering in the hallway. I was not part of that, and I frankly don't know what to say about that. Again, I would just urge both the chairs and this body to pass a piece of legislation that can be adopted and agreed upon in the House, whatever that might be, and work in a bipartisan fashion to get this critically important piece of legislation passed.
Well, Commissioner, here's where we're at. We have probably, with what's in front of us, with the members that are here, probably about 85-90% of us are, I should say about 85-90% of the provisions are sealed up, and we're ready to go. And we've got four or five provisions left out that we need an answer. We need direction from the governor's office. And the problem is that we haven't had any. Now, they just made the comment when I asked them, both orally and in writing, to have one of the governor's representatives here to answer those questions. They said, well, we don't do that. Well, if they don't come to the conference committee and tell us what the sticking points are, especially after the track record that's been established over the past month and a half, Commissioner, we don't know what to do. We don't know what is. I agree with you 110%. I thought that we had a pretty good bipartisan plan put together here, and I think that we can get it through the House and the Senate, but we don't know what the governor's going to do, and he won't communicate with us. It's been frustrating, Commissioner, and let me express my frustration with examples. Example number one is the 2007 policy bill, and it sat there for a year, a little over a year on the table with no action. Everybody knew what was in the bill. It had already been conferred. The only reason it didn't get passed last year is we ran out of time. And there was one provision in there on the Real ID. This bill passed with overwhelming margins in both bodies. The controversy had been worked out of it. A half hour before Representative Hornstein was going to present it on the floor of the House, the governor's office called him up and said, we're going to veto the bill because we don't agree with the real ID provisions. Well, that was nice. Why didn't they tell us that 11 months ago? Why didn't they tell us 11 weeks ago? Why didn't they tell us 11 days before it was scheduled to be heard on the House floor? We went back to conference committee. We tried six different ways to resolve the real ID issue. And it became clear that dealing with the governor's office that it was not going to be accepted under any circumstances. So we passed the bill. It was vetoed. We took it out. Representative Hornstein passed it off the floor last night. I'm sure the governor's probably going to get it in the next day or two and hopefully sign it into law. That's example number one. Example number two, Commissioner, was one of four people that know more about transportation and transportation policy in the state that works for the Department of Transportation was talking with Senator Saltzman, Senator Roebling, and I believe Senator Bonhoff on the issue of having a chief engineer at the department. And this person is Betsy Parker. A lot of people may not agree with Betsy Parker when she speaks on behalf of the department, but she is a leading authority. And she came to some resolve with these three senators, bipartisan basis, on what we should do with that. We said, okay, we adopted the amendment. Senator Saltzman wasn't overly happy, but in the spirit of compromise and kind of moving the ball forward, we took what the department had to offer. Senator Roebling was happy. I believe the House members that saw the language mm-hmm. was happy about that. Governor said he was going to veto it. Now, he's done that on other occasions. He asked Mr. Bell to work out the arrangements on the Central Corridor. And Mr. Bell and hundreds of other people, some in this room, worked tirelessly to get that not only under the federal CEI, but also meet the parameters that the governor had come up with. And in the end, he vetoed the bill. He did a lot of damage to Mr. Bell's credibility and to Ms. Parker's credibility. He clipped him at the knees, Commissioner, is what I'm saying. And you understand that, and I know you do. That's what we've had to deal with, Commissioner. I know that, you know, we're probably preaching to the choir here a little bit, because every time that you've come to the committee, you've been very clear and very distinct about what it is the Department of Public Safety and where they're at. But, Commissioner, the governor's office is just not doing their job. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for coming forward today. Appreciate your presence. I know the Senate Transportation Committee appreciates the presence of your department always. Whether working with us in our offices on developing public safety proposals or in the form of the hearings that we have throughout the year, the conversations we have in the interim, and trying to develop a set of proposals that will assist Minnesota drivers to be more safe, to create a safer environment for Minnesota, less harm, fewer deaths, et cetera. And you and your agency have done a tremendous job of advocating, shaping up these proposals, advocating for them, working with the advocates who are sitting behind you. Senator Murphy has clearly been a key champion. It's been a hallmark of his legislative career to work on these safety issues. MnDOT and their Towards Zero Death program that you're involved with. So you're a consummate professional and have done a great service, and we respect you highly. Today you're sitting here. You've been sent as the governor's representative to speak on this issue. So I just want to be very clear. I want everyone to be very clear. Did you or anyone who works for you, anyone in your office or anyone in your agency, initiate the idea with the governor or his office to communicate to this committee that they can have two of the three public safety provisions that we're moving forward in this bill? Any two, pick two out of the three. Were you part of any of those conversations prior to today?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, the short answer is no. The long answer for the purposes of clarification, I think that we have had some ongoing discussions with any number of legislators and stakeholders. It's clear that the Senate has been receptive to some of these safety measures for a number of years. The House has not been. There's been a lot of people that have worked very, very, very hard the last couple of years to try to get some of these measures passed, particularly primary seatbelt and graduated driver's license. To perhaps a lesser extent, perhaps, I don't know that for a fact, the booster seat legislation. There has been discussion with any number of different people, including legislators, that perhaps one or two of these pieces of legislation could pass in the House, but three might be a lot for members of the House to accept in 1 year. We even had a discussion within the Department of Public Safety and the stakeholders that we represent that we would advocate strongly for only one provision this year, and that was primary seatbelt. That the philosophy has been that there's all three provisions have been in front of legislators for 2, 3, 4 years. Some of them have been passed in the Senate, not the House. We're better off trying to get one piece of legislation passed 1 year and go to the next piece of legislation the next year and have that success behind us than having all three or maybe four pieces of legislation and have none of them passed. So I'm not trying to avoid your question. I've had no discussion with the governor's office, two out of three, and what those might be in anticipation of today or yesterday, but that discussion has taken place with, I think, even some members of this committee.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. Sounds like the answer is kind of. But, you know, we come back to that question. You know, we're not here just doing politics. We're here doing policy, important policies that your agency has been commendable on, like I said earlier. And so we're continually left with this question, why this very odd communication from the governor, two out of three, doesn't matter which one, when your agency is clearly communicating there are priorities, there are important focus. I understand politics is the art of the possible, and it's also about doing the best we can for folks. You've articulated in a very professional way, and I thank you for that, you know, what would have the biggest impact. You know, if the governor was serious about making some advancements on behalf of motoring safety, we would have heard something like this yesterday from the governor. You know what? You know, we're thinking hard about this. You know, we're trying to get to what's possible. And here are the things my agency has prioritized, and here's why. Here's some policy rationale. Here's some political rationale. You know, why don't we get done what we can get done? We're working with you. And, you know, let's make that seatbelts. Let's make that graduated driver's license. We'll come back another year for boosters. We'll keep working on that. But, no, we got some sort of strange over the transom, dark whisper in the hallway. You get two out of three. Pick two. So I appreciate Commissioner Campion's presence today. I still think we need some answers from the governor's people.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, would thank Commissioner Campion for being here. Commissioner, when you listed one through three, I didn't hear that number three wasn't important. I just heard that perhaps one and two might rise a little bit higher on the list. But still, number three is very important. And by number three, I'm referring to the booster seats. We know between 2004 and 2006, 11 children between the ages of 4 and 7 were victims who died in vehicle crashes, unrestrained or in a lap and shoulder belt only. We know the 42 states have already enacted this legislation. We know that 70% of Minnesotans favor passing such a law. We know that for ages 4 through 7, 59% reduction in injury for children in this age group as opposed to using seatbelts alone. And Commissioner, I want to personalize it for a moment. When I practiced law, I had a case in which a young woman in a lap and seat belt only, but not high enough on the lap belt, was rear-ended and was paralyzed because she was too high up vis-a-vis the shoulder belt. And, Commissioner, I sense that from what you said, that you agree that there are safety benefits to the booster law. And in actuality, there is no economic reason for choosing one, two, or the third. There doesn't seem to be any policy reason that we're hearing articulated for choosing one, two, or the third shell. You said you're literally in, the department is literally in favor of all three. So, Commissioner, I respect that you're here. I respect your testimony, and I agree with you completely about doing all three, because I don't know that I can go back to the voters and say, well, we decided to protect this part of the pie, this part of the pie, but you're going to have to wait till the future for us to do this. So, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I'm left wondering. I don't think we have any more answer than we had at 11:20 last night, other than that these are three safety proposals, all are effective, and the Department of Safety would support all three. So I don't think we have any more direction than we had last evening, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hollisman and Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's always regrettable we always seem to have the wrong person sitting at the table. I think you said that yesterday about Ms. Parker when we had her at the table and we were feeling some of those frustrations, and today we have Commissioner Campion. At the very least, what I heard you say last night is we had just been given direction. We could only do two of the three safety issues in the bill, and you asked why. And what I heard is that we were hoping today to have someone from the governor's staff to answer that question. I mean, at the very least, perhaps that would have been the person who spoke to you last night and who conveyed that message so that we could all say, why? Why only two of three safety measures? And here's the dilemma for this conference committee. When we don't know why, we fill in the blanks. And we fill in the blanks with the only information we have. And I was listening very, very carefully to the commissioner. And the hint of something I heard sounded familiar to me the last time I asked the question why. And that was when Central Corridor was vetoed. And I asked why. And I asked questions similar to this. And I heard something very similar then. And it was that legislators said, but I heard him say, legislators said, well, we can maybe do two, but not three. And I heard at the very last minute, prior to that veto of Central Corridor, that a few legislators were in the room. It was a last-minute decision. And that sets a very difficult challenge for us, because it appears that several elected representatives of the people have a very high level of power with the governor in that advice. Not the commissioner of public safety. And the challenge we have then, those of us sitting here, is who were they? And does their level of representation of the people of Minnesota out-trump ours, those of us who have been assigned to sit around this conference table? But that's the similar theme I hear. When we don't know why, we fill in the blanks. And if you listen very carefully, there seem to be, in each of these cases, a few legislators who gave advice that was quickly followed through with, in this case last night, what was told to you in the hall. You can only do two of three safety provisions in this bill. That's a huge challenge for this group to say, do we protect much of this in the bill by taking the advice of the person who approached you in the hall, or do we do what we believe is the right thing to do for the people of Minnesota?
That's a tough question to answer right now, Representative Hollisman. I think that we're probably all going to take a little break sometime here in the next hour or so, and each one of us is going to be left to try to answer that on our own. And you're right about filling in the blanks. I know what I thought right away, and I'm looking around the table, and I think we were all probably thinking about the same thing. And once again, politics has creeped its way into good public policy. And, it shouldn't be that way. And it's unfortunate that it's boiled down to this. I have the greatest respect for Commissioner Campion. I think that he's done a heck of a good job. And like I say, when he comes in front of the committee, he commands the attention, and it's kind of cut to the chase, and let's get work done and move on. And I've always appreciated that. And so, Commissioner, it's tough to sit here and be pointed with you. And I just want you to know that when we leave here, we're still going to be friends. So
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Campion, I have two questions. The first is, let's say we're able to pass primary seatbelt and the graduated driver's license and booster seats. And if we can get our colleagues to agree to that bill and bring it to the governor, would the governor sign that bill? And then the second question would be the federal dollars for the booster seats. I think we haven't addressed that portion of it today, and we had a lot of discussion about, taxi cabs. Cripes, we could buy every cab in the state a booster seat or two for the, I believe it's $25 million that we would get federally. So the two questions I have, if we're able to pass those three portions, would the governor sign that part of that bill? And then following up, more of a discussion on the federal dollars.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I don't know the totality of the rest of the policy in the bill. I don't know if the governor has concerns about other aspects of it. So for me to say whether there's three provisions in the bill and whether he was signing, I don't know that I give you a yes or no. I know clearly that the governor has, for the last number of years, instructed me that I could say publicly that he supports primary seatbelt. He supported it as a legislator. I believe he was even a co-author of it when it was a piece of legislation when he was in the House. And if it gets to his desk, he'll sign it. Last week or the week before, I think on his radio show, I believe it was maybe it was last Friday or Friday before, he said that he was in favor of legislation that dealt with graduated driver's license. I know that he's publicly stated that he supports at least those two pieces of legislation. I just can't speak for the governor. I don't know what I have not had that pointed a conversation with him, and I would be remiss if I said yes or no he would do something with those three provisions. I simply don't know the answer to that. If I did, I would give it to you, Senator.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Yes.
We're throwing stuff out of the bill right and left so that the governor would be able to support the bill. So I guess I would rephrase the question then. If we do have primary seatbelt and graduated driver's license and booster seats in there, would that cause him to say, no, that's too much, I'm not going to support this?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator, say one more time.
If we have the primary seatbelt in there, the graduated driver's license, and the booster seat provisions also stay in the bill, is that too much for him then? I'm just trying to get to this, we have two out of three. I think that I'd like to hear you address that specifically because I guess I haven't heard that. So if the booster seats were in there, is that a deal breaker?
I think you're asking, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I think you're asking me the same question you just asked me before in a different way, and I would have to give you the same answer, and that is I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay, and then I had asked.
I would say clearly, Mr. Chair, that the governor has publicly said that he supports those two other provisions. I simply have never had a conversation with the governor about booster seat legislation. I just haven't. I know generally speaking he is supportive of those measures that save Minnesotans' lives. I know that. Now, again, in a bipartisan manner, if that bill is worked through this committee and has the support on both sides, I think that makes a big difference. But I can't say that what the governor's position on all three of them, because I simply haven't had that conversation.
Could you speak a little bit to the federal dollars that if we do the booster seats, because that's a significant amount of money.
Mr. Chair, I'll do the best I can. Otherwise, there is someone here who specifically has all the information.
That's
Should
fine.
Be Marty, if Mr. Chair, would it be all right?
Yeah, if Ms. Marty wants to come and give us the rundown on the numbers of federal money available with those provisions.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and the members of the committee, the federal dollars that we're guaranteed to receive if we pass primary seatbelt is $17.7 million. We also have additional money that we could receive for those states that passed primary seatbelt law. That money will be so those that did not pass, they're not going to receive their federal money. So that money gets redistributed to those states that have passed primary. So we stand to gain an additional $5 to $8 million, which would bring us to a total of $22 to $25 million total of federal incentive dollars if we pass primary seatbelt. With child passenger safety, because you asked that question earlier, the money would be $180,000 the first year, and in the second year, an additional $125,000 if we have the booster seat law passed. So that's in addition to the $25 million ceiling that I just talked about.
Tell them who you are and what your title is.
And again, I'm Sheree Marty, Director of Office of Traffic Safety with the Department of Public Safety.
Thank you. Senator Jungbauer.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, and to the Commissioner, I thank you, Commissioner, but maybe I'm hearing something a little different, or I watched too many late-night House sessions, because what I heard the Commissioner say is if we put in three things, we may have to go through 8 hours of hearing such things as we are a nanny state. And maybe that's why some people can't buy into that. And so it does get to be a heavy load for some people to buy into, but I guess in thinking the broad picture and in terms of safety, number one thing that comes to mind is if we could outlaw stupidity, we wouldn't need to make these laws, because it's really some people that just will not spend a few dollars to protect their kids, that will not use their seatbelts even though there's a seatbelt law. And I think maybe we need to sell that to some of our counterparts, both in the Senate and the House, that it's because of those people that won't do that they were picking up bodies. But really, members, too, it kind of goes across to where, you know, I've done youth ministry for 25 years, and it kind of comes back to that, where, you know, sometimes I view the legislature as something like that, as we got to walk alongside people, and they expect us to give them certain boundaries. And some people can call those boundaries being a nanny state. I don't think so. In my mind, it's not a nanny state under safety guidelines that actually do save lives. There's other things that certainly we can call being a nanny state, and we might get into certain, well, I won't even go there. I won't go there. But there's things I think you could make that argument. I don't think when you're picking up kids and I've witnessed some of those where unrestrained kids that died on the scene, and I don't know how any parent could ever look back at that and not think about how a few dollars could have saved those kids' lives and stuff. So I think we got to do better with our own members to say, now this is setting some parameters that for people, and we're only setting them because some people are just hard-headed enough that they're not going to do it unless we put it out there. So I really hope we can work this through on these issues.
Senator Jungbauer, I think on the booster seat issue of children between the ages of 4 and 8, parents don't know for certain what they need to do to properly restrain their children. And that is a big part of the reason that this legislation has been pushed. And it was pushed very hard in the 05-06 session by Republican Representative Duke Powell. And I have carried it this session. And it's not that people are too hard-headed to go buy a booster seat. They look to the law for a guideline in this area. When you become a parent, there's plenty of books you can buy at the store, but the baby doesn't come with a manual. And your pediatrician gives you some guidance. And the guidance is based on the law. And so what we put into law matters. It matters in every doctor's office in this state, of every conversation that pediatricians are having with parents as their children go from one phase to another. So I wouldn't want to characterize the safety legislation that we're doing is that we have to do it because people aren't smart enough to figure this out on our own. I just think people want to do the right thing for their kids, and they're looking for guidance from us in this area, and I think it's really important that we do it.
Well, Madam Chair, I think you make a good point, and I didn't mean to assume that you know, blanketly that people were that way. And I think you do make a good point because education, we've got great education programs out there in terms of that. And, you know, we know booster seats are as inexpensive as $12. And Representative Morrow, you brought up a good point because I've seen that in doing our bicycle motocross ministry where there's an accident on the way there and a child wasn't properly restrained and became paralyzed. You see some of those things, and I think those are the kind of things where parents do expect us to put a significant outline of what they should be doing in the law to really guide them on those kind of safety issues. And a good education program, which I think we have in place, and we need to do better there, too.
The other point I think is key to make is if we're not going to bring bills forward where we have the votes just because we don't want an eight-hour conversation from the House Republicans, we wouldn't be passing anything. So the fact that we're going to have an extended conversation is really neither here nor there because whether there's one safety provision or three, we will hear the same conversation and will take the same amount of time.
Well, Madam Chair, I resent as a Republican the blanketly doing the nanny state on everything that somebody disagrees with using, you know, flippantly using the term nanny state because under these auspices, I don't think it comes anywhere near being a nanny state.
Senator Jungbauer, you've been very consistent and have been a champion from your caucus on these safety issues, and, you know, that's greatly appreciated. I think you're following in the footsteps of people like Tom Neville and Dave Knutson, you know, both people that understood where we're at with this issue. And these three issues are nothing new to the state of Minnesota. Anybody that's been in legislature for more than a couple of years have heard the testimony umpteen times. And, you know, quite frankly, I don't know how many more committee hearings I want to sit through with grieving parents and grieving grandparents. It just, after a while, it wears on you. And every day you crack open the newspaper and you read where somebody else is perished on our roads. 500 people last year, 503, I believe the exact number is. The year before, there was a few less. The year before, there was, you know, about 496 or two, something like that. It's rough numbers. So, you know, there was a period of time where we were starting to make some progress and the fatality rate was starting to trickle down. Last year, we had a little uptick. I think that was, you know, a few other things. The bridge collapse didn't help. And I think that there was maybe just a little more misbehavior on the roads last year than in some previous years. But the thing is we need to continue that effort to systematically lower those death tolls and bring them down and get them in a more manageable level. I mean, not only does it, you know, create the emotional upheaval inside the family, but it costs us all money. A national study, and this is just for inattentive drivers, which is probably about, that results in about half of the crashes that happen out there. Somebody's goofing around and they're not paying attention. Last year in the United States, it was $143 billion of property damage. And, you know, so now it's turned into a fiscal issue. And when you look at how much it costs every time someone dies on Minnesota roads, roughly about $1.1 million, those are costs that we are all picking up as taxpayers. And, you know, so both from a human standpoint and from a fiscal standpoint, it makes no sense for us to bottle these bills up any longer. And if it takes a five-hour discussion on the House floor or a 20-hour discussion on the House floor, that's 20 hours that's going to be spent in improving the lives of the people of the state of Minnesota. So to my House members, I hate to put you through that exercise, but you all believe in this stuff, and so do we. And if you believe in it, it's worth fighting for. That's what my former housemate used to tell me all the time, Mike Oskop. If you believe it, it's worth fighting for. And this is something that we all believe in, and we're going to fight for it. Now, I'm going to make a suggestion to our conference committee members here. And this is outside of the normal. way outside of the normal. But we're going to take a break here shortly, and I believe the House has a caucus to go to, and Senator Sieben probably has a couple things that she needs to take care of. That's what you get for, you know, having a young child at home. So you get to go run home and take care of those things. I wish I could run home and see my grandson, but it's a little far. And then we're going to make the request once again to have someone from the governor's staff who can talk to us in specifics about some of the things in the bill, Commissioner, because, you know, you're an authority in your area, but there's some things here from Department of Transportation that we need answers on, and we need to know whether or not the bill is going to get signed into law or become another bill on the veto heap. We want to avoid that at all costs. So what we're going to do is we're going to come back, and if there's not someone here from the governor's office to answer our questions, we're going to reconvene our conference committee in the governor's reception room and wait for him. And the public will be invited.
Mm-hmm. Senator Murphy?
Yes.
I do want to express a concern, however, that the legislature doesn't, we're not here to take dictation from the governor's office. The way a bill becomes a law is that it passes through committees. It is debated by members of each body. It is passed off the floor of each body, and it is sent to a conference committee. There are many places along that path for the governor's staff, and the departments to weigh in. We have heard from the Department of Transportation on almost all the provisions in this bill. We have heard from the Department of Public Safety on all of the provisions of this bill. And I'm not entirely comfortable with the prospect of sending the ball into the governor's court and saying, please let us know which words are acceptable to you in this bill, because I think that, you know, he understands how a law is made, and he understands he could have at any point along the way weighed in. Now, that we're reacting to this because of a whisper in the hallway last night, of course, raises the issue that this is not a public policy-based concern. This is a trying to get a chip on the table for negotiations, just like Central Corridor was in his bonding bill, and then he vetoes it. Well, he's got a chip in negotiations. I can understand that. I understand the governor wants certain things in the budget resolution, and that he and Senator Pogemiller and Representative Kelleher are having conversations about that. I don't understand how this becomes a chip in on the table and why we would do that to a provision that saves lives. I understand politics. I do understand politics. But I think the people we represent would like us to, at some points in our government service, simply make policy and put the politics to the side and do what's the best thing for Minnesotans. These bills have all been carried by GOP House members in the previous biennium. So this is not a political issue. There are Republicans who support the safety provisions, and there are Democrats. The governor's own Department of Public Safety has provided testimony and support for these provisions. So I think that this is a topic that should be outside of the realm of politics. And I don't want to, at any point in this process of this conference committee, take dictation from the governor.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Campion. I guess I'm frustrated by the process. I was frustrated last night and a little bit upset. I'm in the minority here on the primary seat belt, and I understand that. I understand the way that the committee's set up, but a little frustrated last night because I was tied up in debate on the floor that I wasn't able to express my views on that last night. And but what we're doing here is what we're supposed to be doing here, debating these issues and working them through. And I feel like I'm wasting my time being here on this conference committee when the governor comes in or somebody from the governor's office comes in at 11:20. And all the work we've done on this committee and a lot of hard work and good work we've done gets brushed aside by a comment that you can have two out of the three. I mean, I thought this government was set up as three equal partners, the House, the Senate, and the governor's office, to talk about these issues and bring them forward. And as we're going through in this committee, it's like, why are we wasting our time doing this? Why am I here? It's a beautiful day out there. It was a beautiful day yesterday. Now, the debate on the floor doesn't bother me as much because I'm getting used to that. Hard to say that, but I'm getting used to that. But this is frustrating that we're here trying to do this. We're trying to come up, and we've bent over backwards to try and going through the bill, trying to do things to make sure the governor is going to be on board and with us as that equal partner, and then to have it the rug pulled off from underneath us at the last minute. I guess it frustrates me and it upsets me. And like I said, I hope this afternoon we have somebody that can go through what we've worked on and go through the provisions in the bill and help us as equal partners to get this bill passed, because I'd like to see this signed. I mean, there's a lot of good provisions in this bill that will move the state forward, and I'd like to see it get it signed into law. So I guess that's the piece I have to say, and I hope we have somebody here this afternoon that will work with us instead of throwing bombs at the end. That's the part that upsets me the most about what happens on the floor of the House when there are people out there throwing bombs and not trying to work the process and move it forward, because public safety is not a partisan issue, just like roads and bridges are not a partisan issue. Republicans and Democrats all drive on those same roads, and independents.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson, I do want to apologize for letting the discussion and the vote happen without your presence here yesterday. So I think in private I apologize to you already, and I just want to make sure everybody knows that that was an oversight on my part, and I'll do better next time. Senator Dibble and then Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to respond quickly to Representative Hartman's comments. I agree completely with everything you said. I think perhaps, though, Senator Murphy was suggesting that he is trying to flush the politics out of this conference committee and out of the policy issues that we're debating. I think we've laid a fairly solid foundation and established pretty clearly, because we have the consummate professional at the end of the table who said, you know, the professional opinion is this. That leaves us only to conclude that there's politics at work here on the part of the governor's office. And so we're trying to pull the governor's office forward to say, let's talk about this out in the open, in the sunshine, in the public. We're doing the public's business. So that's the goal. By whatever means we can achieve that, let's get the governor to come out into the open and deal with us. Either say, hey, this is politics, or this is what I believe in a policy context. And so I think Senator Murphy's goal is to let's flush the politics out. Let's deal with the politics forthrightly, or let's get down to business and deal with policy. So, you know, I think Senator Murphy is just trying to figure out a way to do that. Mr. Chair, I would also, a gentle counsel to Commissioner Campion. You're an able representative of the administration and the governor, but you also have a larger job, a larger trust. It's a public trust. And you were sent here today to represent the governor. The governor, however, is sending us a political message and engaging in politics. I think it's important for you just to keep an eye on your professionalism, your professional standards, your professional responsibility, your larger public trust. We saw Parker get caught up in some of that. We saw Mr. Bell get caught up in some of that. Governor has really good people working for him, and people whom I respect tremendously. And it's a shame when I see a narrower political agenda trip up otherwise outstanding public service professionals.
Sir Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I just wanted to be very clear. I understand that the governor sent the message that we were to choose two out of the three safety provisions, which leads me to believe that that is somehow our decision, the conference committee's decision. And I understand that you expressed prioritization for the primary seatbelt and the graduated driver's license provision. And I also understand that you've never personally had a conversation with the governor about the booster seat legislation.
However, I just want it to be very clear that the governor must support the booster seat legislation if he's saying we can choose two out of the three provisions. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, if that's what the governor said, if that's what he said, I wasn't part of that discussion. I would think that one would be able to deduct that that in fact is the case.
Thank you. And so I would echo what Representative or Chairwoman Hortman said, that unfortunately this bill is being being taken hostage to politics here, and I would hope that the members of the committee would reject that proposition and instead do what we think is right as members of the committee. Let the House worry about passing it off the floor, but not engage in the same game plan that the governor is playing. And if we as policymakers feel that all three provisions are important and worthy to become law in Minnesota, that then we should do our part and send a bill with all three provisions to the governor, and he can explain to the public then what he doesn't support and why he's endangering Minnesotans' lives by vetoing the provision or the bill.
Commissioner,
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, just what the thought in a strong bipartisan supported bill, I think will be what the governor is interested in, whatever that may look like. A very strong bipartisan supported bill. And I would ask this body that you're on the doorstep of historic legislation here in Minnesota. Legislation that is many, many people have worked tirelessly, and it's good, solid public policy. I would ask, in all due respect, that you don't let that opportunity get away.
Thank you, Commissioner, Ms. Marty. I think that that's thank you. I want to let you off the hot seat here. Your 45 minutes of burning in front of the committee has now come to a close.
Mr. Chair, it could have been a lot worse.
It could. And on another light note, Commissioner, just so you know, I got a note passed to me from Senator Moi, who's the chair of the Short Senators Club. They prefer the booster seats. With that, members, we're going to let Commissioner Campion get back to work. We've got two lists here, and I think everybody, if we could get them passed out or make sure everybody has them. And they're two lists, one Ms. Berzosky put together and one Mr. Burris puts together. And it's kind of a list of two lists. A lot of things are the same. On some items that staff needed some clarification on. I thought we could work through these real quick. Chair Hortman has a bill. Senator Jungbauer.
I have another conference committee supposed to be meeting at 12:30 that I don't anticipate it taking very long.
We're going to be done at 1 o'clock, Senator Jungbauer. Representative Hortman has a bill to present at 1 o'clock, and we will be done at about 5 to 1 because I think you got to go to the House to get it presented. All right. So. We're just going to take about 15, 20 minutes here and try to help staff. That way that they'll have a little bit of time to get these things drafted correctly. Ms. Berzosky, do we want to start on your list first here? And I think that the first item is that the – oh, no. The first item is Senator Jungbauer's provision. Senator Jungbauer, do you want to – kind of clear the air on what this actually does? I think that there's some people who are...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the House members. I was trying to sweeten the pot a little bit for the House members to understand the issue a little better. it is pretty simple for the folks in the room, and I think we got all the House members up to speed on it, but it's a real... basically a clarification of the difference between a passenger vehicle and a commercial vehicle within the gross vehicle weight rating of 9,000 to 13,000 pounds. Today, if you have and I'll use the example of a pickup truck, 9,000 pounds or greater, that pulls a fifth wheel, when you go to Department of Public Safety to get your license plates, you would literally have the choice between a passenger plate or a Y plate. The Y plate is cheaper, so if you're looking at a budget, you'd pick the Y plate. But really, the Y plate was intended to be a commercial plate. And so every year, since I have one of the nicest commercial enforcement divisions sets up in my district, many times during the year, I get all these calls from constituents that get stopped, and they say, "Senator, can you fix this? I got stopped at the commercial enforcement. I don't have a commercial vehicle, and I don't know why they're inspecting me." And my first question is, "Do you have a Y plate on your vehicle?" And they say, "Yes." And I say, "Well, that's a commercial plate, so you're subject to commercial inspection." So they get a little testy. But we're really trying to just re-clarify statutes. That particular section of statute hasn't been updated since I'm not sure when, and counsel could tell us. But we want to define and clarify that if you are not using that vehicle in a commercial enterprise, then you are running a passenger plate on it. If you are running it in a commercial enterprise, you would run a Y plate and be subject to any other DOT standards and commercial inspections. So I think it's pretty simple, although it hits a bunch of different sections in order to clarify it.
Senator Youngbauer, did you have a bill in the House?
Yes, but I don't know what the status was.
Do you know who
was.
Your author was or what happened to that bill?
Do not know.
Senator, my concern is that this maybe was an issue that more properly fit within the context of a transportation finance bill. I'm concerned because even though I'm irritated about the safety dispute we're having with the governor, I'm concerned about not putting things in this bill that just invite a veto, and mm-hmm. I don't want to suggest that we're raising taxes on certain members of the public. Is this just to clarify?
It is a specific clarification. It doesn't change any fees or anything, although it would have an impact to people if you are running a commercial plate and using the cheaper option today. And in fact, once the 7 years goes through, a lot of people would switch back into a passenger plate because it's cheaper at that point. It clarifies it for Department of Public Safety, and it actually puts it out till 2011 because Public Safety doesn't have the ability in their computer system to handle this. But the reason we're trying to get the policy in place today is so the new computer system that we're funding ostensibly this year gets this programming in place for that. But they couldn't put it in place till the department testified till 2011. It would take them that long to actually put the provisions in place.
Senator, I still believe it would have benefited from a hearing in the House and a discussion in the House. And so you might have three House votes, but I'm not one of them.
Ms. Berezovsky says it was Representative Beard was the House author, got re-referred to the Finance Committee of Transportation in the House and did not get a hearing.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I want a bill that's going to pass. I've been on conference committees for, I think, 5 years now without bills to pass. So if anybody thinks this has any problem and would cause the bill not to pass, I would be the happiest person on the face of the earth to see this conference committee pass a bill that the governor signs.
Well, Senator Jungbauer, if we can get some notice from the governor's office on this, we'll keep it open for discussion. I think we heard Chair Hortman say that we might want to take a look at it a little closer, but we'll...
And members, since it wouldn't go into effect till 2011, I think the department knows that I'm not going to let it drop, so I would imagine that with their new computer system, they would be making sure the programming would happen. I'm getting a nod as well, so I have no problem with laying this on the side. And if people think it's of no concern later on, we could throw it back in, but I don't want to have any contentious issue in there. No problem.
All right, members, we're going to go through this real quick. I know that the sesquicentennial plate is still an issue for the House members, and we'll just leave that one open for right now and see what happens. I wanted to ask the House on the felony decal issue, and we were talking about making that a gross misdemeanor, and I was just wondering how the House felt about that, and we would take the complete provision if it was a gross misdemeanor.
Mr. Chair, I think that sounds like a good compromise. I would move the language on R42, House Section 35, with the change that it be a gross misdemeanor instead of a felony.
All right. Is any more discussion on that issue? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you. The next we have some provisions in regards to Type 3 school buses. And Ms. Bierzowski, I'll let you
Mr. Chair and members, I noted the Type 3 school bus provisions because they have recently been enacted and signed by the governor and were previously adopted in this conference committee as well. So I included it on the list in case the conference committee wanted to delete those sections.
Senator Dibble?
Sounds like they're already established in law, so why don't we just delete those? So I'll make a motion to delete the previously adopted language.
Okay. Is everyone comfortable with that? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Truth and ticket.
Truth and ticket.
I wrote the wrong word down. There we go. Okay. The next is the truth and ticketing. And the staff recommended, and I... Yes, this is on the last item, and this item are both on Mr. Burris's notes as well. This is the notice of the surcharge on the traffic ticket, and the staff recommends the deletion of the word criminal from the head note. Was that what you were talking about too, Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, I had that on the other list as a... As an item to see if see what the committee wanted to do with it.
Okay. Does anyone have a problem with the staff recommendation of eliminating the word criminal? If not, Senator Olsen moves that deletion. Senator Dibble.
Oh, why don't we vote on that amendment, Mr. Chair? I have an idea.
Okay, thank you. On that, on the Olsen motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I have perhaps a deal.
On the surcharge?
Mr. Chair, I think the sesquicentennial plate is important, and I'm now a Sesqua Scout, and you can be one, too, just about by the history desk, and you can be a Sesqua Scout. Everyone's familiar with the proposal, so I don't need to necessarily speak to the merits, but, Wisconsin did this, and they ended up raising a lot of money for their sesquicentennial celebration. And Senator Ann Rest has been a dogged champion of the sesquicentennial and has brought this forward because we failed to provide any decent amount of funding for the sesquicentennial last year. I think it would prove to be a very popular thing. I understand Chair Leader's he's a purist on this, but maybe we could... accept the truth in ticketing in exchange for the sesquicentennial plate.
Chair Hortman.
Senator Dibble, those are both Senate provisions.
But I see on the House side, I've heard a great deal of enthusiasm by House members for the truth in ticketing provision.
Senator Dibble, it's a great deal of enthusiasm for the League of Minnesota Cities and the fine lobbyist who represents them.
Madam Chair, I guess we thought we were going to roll you on that one a little bit, but I guess you caught us. So,
Senator Dibble, when would the sesquicentennial plates go away? If we were to allow them to exist, is this a limited time offer only, or?
That's my understanding. I would have to look at the language, but I think they would just print a few up this year, sell them, and away they go. I don't think they'd be. I don't think they'd be a viable product in the market after this year, anyways.
I wonder if we aren't already too late. We should have done it last year because people would have had it on for all. By the time they get made, designed, and made and purchased, everyone will have said, "Okay, we celebrated that already." Mm-hmm. The celebration is in May.
Mr. Chair. I don't think that's actually the case. I think they you know, they're pretty much ready. The design is ready to go. They've got the technology. They can, you know.
Ms. McCormick, would
they
you
can they can get these out the door. We certainly aren't going to be able, Mr. Chair, to make as much money as Wisconsin did because we are a little bit behind. But Senator Ress was asked that question and answered it, and thought we could sell enough to make a few hundred thousand dollars, not the millions that Wisconsin made, but a few hundred thousand dollars, which would make a big, big difference for the sesquicentennial celebration and be a great play for people to have.
Representative Earhart?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dibble, those only come online every 7 years. Is that what the deal is, or can we all rush out and buy a plate because this is the year? Do we have to wait till our 7 years elapses? Or
No. Ms. McCormick can answer those questions, but I know that with the Proud to be a Veteran plate, I just, you know, surrendered my old plates and got the veteran plate. And I think it's probably the same thing here. Is that right, Ms. McCormick?
Yes, Mr. Chair, for the record, Pat McCormick with DVS. Yes, you can surrender your plate and then replace it. And this would be a contribution plate so that there would be addition. There would be the money going for the sesquicentennial. We did have some discussions with Senator Ress's office when she was offering this legislation, and I think we would need about 2 months to get 6 weeks to 2 months to get everything completed. But as Senator Dibble said, this design has already been approved. It's just a matter of getting the programming done and getting we're using a flat plate technology now with MinCorps, and we've talked with our law enforcement committee to ensure that the design would meet readability standards and the standards that law enforcement need to enforce, and so that they can see the number when they're driving and carrying out their responsibilities. So we had thought we could try to get it done within 2 months of whenever if the legislation was passed. So.
Senator Olsen?
Mr. Chair, Ms. McCormick, are those kind of custom made to order then, so you're not going to make like 100,000 plates, and if only 50,000 sold, you'd be sitting with a bunch of unused plates? Or
Mr. Chair and Senator Olsen, we have to have a certain amount of inventory to do a plate, but because we would be, those would be plates, though, that we would send out from our offices usually, because it's a contribution plate, so it's a little bit different than a plate that the deputy registrar's offices would have. But we would not we'd do it, you know, in certain amounts, but we wouldn't go way out there in terms of inventory. This flat plate technology is much better about not having to do the types of plates we used to do with the embossed plates, and so it's much easier to do plates on demand with this system. So this would be what we would be doing.
Like a T-shirt shop.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Ms. McCormick. I tell you what, we're going to go ahead and recess now. We'll come back at 3 o'clock in this room. In the meantime, we will try to have some conversations with the governor's office and House members. I would just hold that. When we come back, we'll vote on the surcharge issue and the sesquicentennial issue. That the committee is recessed.
Okay. Do you know whether we have this room? Could we leave this here?
Yeah, we can. And members, just leave out. You can leave your stuff here.
300,000 to 500,000.
We're meeting in the reception.
I'll ask.
No, except for you. You need to give me your wallet and then you can go.
That's the advisable.
Conference Committee on Transportation will come back to order. Members, we still have a few open issues here on the two. On the two lists from council, and Mr. Burris, about where were we at here?
Mr. Chair and members, I believe we're on the Senate's open issues list. There was most recently some discussion of the notice of surcharge on traffic tickets, as well as the Sesquicentennial Centennial plate.
Easy for you to say.
Madam Chair, there is I think Senator Dibble wanted to speak one more time about the Sesquicentennial plate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This time, one more time with feeling. Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, we do have Jane Leonard here as Executive Director of the Sesquicentennial Commission, who can answer questions that were asked earlier about how much money can this raise, how, you know, what is the Sesquicentennial Commission's budget situation, how quickly can we get these things out into people's hands, et cetera. So she's prepared to speak. If you'd like to hear from her, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Can you give your name for the record, please?
My name is Jane Leonard. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Sesquicentennial Commission, and I apologize for my attire. We're getting ready for Statehood Week, so which is just the beginning mm-hmm. of the festivities throughout the year.
Ms. Leonard, maybe you can tell us how much money you hope to gain with the license plate.
Well, we can sort of look back at what other states have done with similar plates, the most recent being Wisconsin back in 1998 for their sesquicentennial. They expected to make probably $400,000 or so, I think, and ended up making almost $4 million because people were so excited to have something that they could personally show their pride for their state through. I think that given where we are in the year and just kind of starting out with the big festivities, we would certainly like to see, you know, at least a couple hundred thousand or up to $1 million that could be raised from this. I know that people are very – well, one of the first questions I got when I took this job back in February of 2007 was, will there be a license plate? and so, you know, we have – looked at other ways to raise money, and we've been able to raise about $750,000 in corporate and foundation donations and cash, but a lot of our money is coming in kind, and that's helpful, but it doesn't necessarily pay all the bills. And so having a license plate that people can participate in and you know, show their pride personally on their vehicle, I think is a great way to raise money. It may help actually replace, I hope, some of the cash that the legislature has already fronted for the sesquicentennial, which right now stands at just over $1 million since 2005 in terms of the planning and the grants that have gone out. And I'd just like to say one thing about the grants. When Wisconsin did their license plate, much of their money, the $4 million, went back out into communities across the state for their sesquicentennial grants. The grant dollars that we received from the legislature, about $350,000, were quadrupled in terms of community investments, both in cash, about $600,000 in cash, and $400,000 in kind from every district across the state. So I think that if additional money can be raised through license plate donations, that would be a great way to invest back into our state and into the communities that you represent.
Thank you. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How does the governor feel about this?
The governor?
The governor of the state of Minnesota.
Representative Earhart, Mr. Chair, I've not spoken with the governor personally about it, so I can't say how he feels about it. I would think that he, like any other Minnesotan, would probably be proud to have a license plate. I certainly would go out and buy one if one was available. And they're already designed, so we don't have to go through that. So.
Well, it was just a curiosity question, Mr. Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if that isn't maybe run by the clearance of the governor before we move on this item. But if you're satisfied with it, then you feel that he'll be all right with it. I'll trust the gentleman.
Okay, well, he's going to, Representative Earhart, Mr. Chair, the governor will be accompanying us next week on the Capitals for a day throughout the whole state, so I will try to ask him that.
Thank you. Any further requests? Senator Dibble.
Thank you. I believe the governor does use specialty plates himself, support our troop plates, so doesn't seem to have a philosophical disposition in opposition to specialty plates. I also wanted to mention, Mr. Chair, we did have territorial centennial commemorative plates back in 1949. We also had statehood centennial plates in 1958. So, you know, we're carrying on a proud Minnesota tradition. And most other states that have had sesquicentennial centennials have had commemorative plates as well, of course, including Iowa and Wisconsin joining us. So I think it's a good idea for two reasons. I think it's something that lots of regular folks can participate in. And I think there's a lot of interest and a lot of pride in Minnesota, and people want to show that. And then there's the practical consideration. The fact is the money we have appropriated to the Sesquicentennial Commission has pretty much been burned through already. And so they're just kind of getting along on a shoestring and some of these in-kind contributions. And it's unfortunate and maybe too late to change the fact that they had to drastically scale back the kinds of local grants that they were making out to organizations and communities to help them with their festivities. But it might help us carry out some of the larger planned activities and add some stuff that's been dropped off the list. I actually also need to correct, Mr. Chair, I misspoke. I re-reviewed the legislation. These plates don't cancel under the current proposal. They continue in perpetuity. Under the proposal, the money that, if plates continue to be sold after this year, then that money would go, after the Sesquicentennial Commission expires, would go into an account for the capital area restoration. As a compromise, I would be willing to perhaps terminate the production of these plates at the end of this year, if that would make committee members more comfortable. My side says no. Just throwing it out there. I don't know if that's a concern or represents
Senator Jumbo.
A scaled back approach to this proposal.
Well, Mr. Chair, as somebody that's not in favor of every license plate under the earth, unless we charge an extraordinary amount of money and people go in and design them by themselves on a computer and print them off with the new data stuff, I like the Sesquicentennial license plate. I think it does derive a sense of pride for people in Minnesota, and I would like to see the continued sale. We're getting off on a late start here, and I think people may buy them, and I love the idea that it goes into the capital restoration account. It's something I'm very passionate about, as well as I believe the capital to be the arguably the most important building in the state of Minnesota, and I think we ought to get the job done of restoring it and adding on for proper utilization today. So I am in favor of Senator Dibble's language all the way without changes.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't think the House side is so much the plates themselves, but more out of deference to our chair of our Transportation Finance Committee, Representative Leader, who, respecting his opinion about special plates and the fact that, you know, we get so many different ones out there, and his opposition to them, I think that's more of what the House position is all about than any opposition to them or the way the money's going to go.
Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, members, a Representative Leader's concern on the specialized plates is that their primary purpose is for the use of public safety. And when we put a lot of things on the plate, that diminishes their value as a public safety tool.
Ms. Leonard.
Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, if I could address that. The These plates, I understand, have been run past the Public Safety Department, and they actually are quite visible and are even more visible, frankly, than the Wisconsin plates are, which are still selling, and you can still see them on the road. But these are very safety conscious, and you can easily see the numbers. I'd also like to point out that, like our commemorative stamp, which is coming out on May 17th from the U.S. Postal Service, we really only get one chance every 50 years to do this. So it is a very special plate, just like the stamp is very special. And you'll be able to see the stamp on May 17th right out here on the Capitol lawn. So.
Well, hopefully we went home by then, but
we'll come back.
Senator Dibble, any last words before we, I think we need to move to a vote here on this.
All right. Well, I understand and respect Representative Leader's position. My only response is, you know, the horse has left the barn on that, and we've got plates, and I agree. I mean, we probably shouldn't have all these plates for different colleges and universities and what have you. And, you know, maybe we can at some point rein that in. I think, you know, this rises to a slightly higher level than those purposes. And so I completely agree and understand. You know, like I said, we've already kind of established by practice and usage, you know, some opportunities for the plate to be used for purposes like this. Why don't you?
Oh, Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, and I guess I would like to get some feedback from the House, but what if perhaps we did put like a 3-year sunset so it gives it a little longer window for people to show their pride for the sesquicentennial? Because, again, like Senator Dibble says, I think this is what the intended use of license plates was for. And while I think it's admirable for fire departments and personnel like that to have license plates, you know, they can show what they belong to with a simple extra placard in the vehicle and things like that, where this is, again, a state issue. It's a state license plate. It's our sesquicentennial for the state of Minnesota, so I think it is a good use of that. And if we put a sunset on it, perhaps Representative Leader could swallow his pride just on this one, because it's again, it's a state issue, and it wouldn't be something that would go on into perpetuity at that point if the House members would be interested in that kind of a compromise.
Representative Earhart?
I don't have anything to say, Mr. Chairman, but I'll make something up if you'd like.
That's what I was hoping for. Well, Senator Dibble, did you want to move?
Well, why don't we just vote on it with the 3-year sunset? I don't know if I need to make a formalized.
On the issuance.
On the issuances.
Mm-hmm. Whatever. So they're over in 3 years.
We'll incorporate that in your motion, Senator Dibble, that no. Have a 3-year sunset.
And members, just, you know, we gave the Sesquicentennial Commission a fraction of what they said they articulated they needed, and they're out of money, and we're doing kind of half-baked effort at this celebration. And I don't know that we're going to be coming up with any appropriations out of our general fund this year. This is about the only way I can see that we're going to be able to make some resources available to them to do a halfway decent celebration this year throughout the state.
On the Dibble motion, further discussion, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails.
Thank you.
Mr. Burris, on the next issue, it was on that notice of surcharge on the traffic ticket. Is there a delayed implementation date on that? And if so, what is the date? Okay, council tells me we have to use up all the existing traffic tickets before that law would be implemented.
Senator Murphy, I'd move that section if you're ready to vote.
We are. All in favor of the Hortman motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Next one down is an A11 amendment, and we'll get that passed out. And members, the other day we added to the bill, there's money available through the federal government to help move some pieces of utility that are in the right of way when we go to build the light rail line out here, out back. And we gave an exemption the other day to District Heat. This would put in those other public entities that also use the right-of-way. It would allow them to apply for the money as well. So it's kind of a fairness issue. If one's able to get the money, they all should be able to get the money. And I would move that amendment. Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Members, the Met Council has asked us to reconsider the dam patch issue that we've previously adopted. And I believe that if we remove this from the bill, we'll get one step closer to getting it wrapped up. I know this gives people serious heartburn, but we have to make progress here. Senator Debel.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I was of the understanding that the Met Council actually wasn't in favor of being micromanaged to this level of detail and actually wanted to be freed up to study whatever reasonable corridors were out there to be studied. So did they explain the reason for their requested the requested change to delete previously adopted language?
Mr. Shetner?
Alex, you saw that we adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council, and I appreciate Senator Murphy bringing this back up on the table. And Senator Debel, you are correct. The Council had this as an initiative this year, and we passed it through both bodies. And when I testified before the committee last Thursday and was asked what issues that we potentially would have in the policy bill, I stated the taxing district sections, and that was all. I had since heard from the administration that this is a problem, so I am back here today before you to ask you to please have that removed. And I don't enjoy saying that, but I have to ask you to do that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Representative Hausman, please give your speech again about particular legislators having a little more power than everyone else in this room.
I haven't found the language yet.
It's on page R84. This is a language that allows the Met Council to unwind the prohibition that the legislature placed on considering the Dan Patch corridor for any transit purposes whatsoever. Remember, we passed that like three times. We killed it, and then we killed it again, and then we killed it dead as a legislature because there are some parochial interests there who insisted on that, despite the benefit to the region. Both bodies passed bills with the support of the Met Council, and we thought, by extension, the administration, that perhaps we should unwind that action by the legislature And I'll add, Mr. Chair, last night I was in front of a neighborhood group, and they've got some concerns about the routing of the Southwest Corridor and would very much like me to pass a bill that says the Southwest Corridor will go on a specific path and not another path. And I told them as a matter of principle I was not going to take that kind of an action. And I've since gotten five very hotly worded emails to my inbox, but I will continue to stand on that. Because I think that's not our role as legislators. That's the role of local communities working in conjunction with their local officials and the professional staff. It's not up to us to reach in and micromanage the agency to this level of detail.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Senator Dibble, I know I have been given very stern direction many times on the Central Corridor line not to write in scoping language, that I leave that to the experts, and I have always respected that direction from the Met Council.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the time this prohibition was put in, the Met Council spent $472,000 on a study which said essentially that this corridor is not suitable at this time. Now, there is an awful lot of money that needs to go into that corridor if, in fact, it ever becomes feasible to spend the money to rebuild the line. They now put 10-mile-an-hour freight pieces along there, and if you want to go 50 miles an hour with passenger service, you're going to have to rebuild the line. And so they said at this time, and that was about 5 years ago, that there's no need to go any further with this, and so we took it off the table. And somehow or other, the Met Council had forgotten that they had done the study. And I had to remind them at the hearing when I brought the study in and threw it on the table, and I said, would you please read this before you head into doing any more work on that corridor down there? You got the planning document right here that said we're not going to do anything with it, and these are the reasons. So that's the reason that somebody finally came to their senses and said, let's put the prohibition back to the way it was.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, well, if that's the case, then, of course, Met Council's request earlier this year is confusing, and if that's the case and if the facts lead us to a conclusion like Representative Earhart described, then there will be no transit corridor in the Dan Patch. That's the way the process works. It doesn't work for the legislature to reach in and do the work of professional technical planning staff, transportation planners, and the like. That happens as a conversation between members of a local community, their locally elected officials, and the professional staff that helps establish these studies. And so, if the facts support the conclusion that Representative Earhart describes, we don't need legislation. I understand Mr. Shetton is on a political errand. We're doing a lot of political tasks. We're asking professional, highly respected people to do these political errands in front of this committee, and I feel bad for Mr. Shetland. I understand we got to do some stuff to get this bill out. I'm chair of the Transit Subcommittee. I will continue to stand on the principles I articulated to my neighborhood group last night. I won't support this motion to take it out.
Well, Mr. Shetland, I think that you've probably got a pretty good sense of where most of the members are on the committee here. I know the only reason I'm voting to take it out is for a big picture. So you're more if this is successful and is taken out of the bill, Mr. Shetland, what I'm saying is we'll probably be back here next year talking about getting this cleaned up, because I agree wholeheartedly with Senator Dilley.
And Mr. Chair, I would normally be tempted to ask Dakota County to come to the table, but I don't want to put anyone on a spot because, you know, my fear is that we're not even necessarily reflecting the wishes of local county commissioners that we're responding to someone else.
Well, nobody's happy about this, but I'll move to strike that language.
On the Olsen's motion, All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Shutton.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Can we just help ourselves to micromanaging the council from now on? They just asked us to micromanage them in this case. So.
It seems like there's a lot of wanting to have it both ways going on, Senator Dibble. I realize that.
I'll remember this.
Mr. Burris, can you clue us in on the next one, or Ms. Pierzowski on the Senate side, the reports?
Mr. Chair and members, the next open issue is on R90, Senate Section 117, and it provides that the MnDOT and MET Council have to create certain plans and reports within current appropriation levels. And the committee called us that provision until it was decided exactly which plans were going to be required. And the reports that would fall within this section have been adopted.
We're going to spend money on this. We already have the
documentation plan, the transit report, and the special check plan.
This is just old language.
And Ms. Parker, would you come to the table, please? Ms. Parker, as I realize that MnDOT's been asked to do a lot of studies, and you gave me quite a detailed list of all the studies that are either underway or have been proposed. It appears that what we're asking here from the department is to work within your own budget to get this done. Is that going to be a problem?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. I believe that we had agreed to do the studies that are described here, and we had expected we would do them within our own budget. I had talked to Senator Dibble about this language, but only because I thought it was confusing. I wasn't sure what the word current meant, whether it meant this year's appropriation, next year's appropriation. Some of these studies would probably cross fiscal years, and I had assumed that if you didn't give us an appropriation, we would, of course, do it within our current fiscal year, and so thought this language was probably just unnecessary.
But, Ms. Parker, it sounds like the answer is yes, that you can get these done inside your current budget.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct, except for the comprehensive statewide rail plan that's not, I think, contemplated under this, but that we talked about last night.
Right, this is not part of that motion. Then Senator Jungbauer would move this provision. All in favor say aye.
Right.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. members, the next is these are changes to the enacted funding law, Chapter 152. And these are items of contention, and we don't need a motion either way. If someone feels strongly enough to vote on this, we can, but we all know that if this or any part of these are in the bill, that the bill is in jeopardy.
Yes, Chair.
Representative Morrow.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, but I do have a question for Ms. Parker on the bonding language concerning District 7. Mm-hmm. I've had conversations, and I'm not sure that that's an objectionable part, but I'd like to at least hear that and know that.
Ms. Parker. Ms. Parker, did you Representative Miller, please.
Ms. Parker, I just want to make sure, because I happen to live in District 7, there was language in the House side that added the term excluding the amount allocated to District 7 under Paragraph C, and Paragraph C concerned a $300 million for bridge work. And I didn't understand whether the agency had a position on that one way or another about clarifying that language.
Ms. Parker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, I believe the agency was asked as a matter of a technical correction whether it was necessary to amend that language in order to authorize the district to do the necessary bridge work before it spent money on the trunk highway that was described in the language. And I believe the agency responded that the way the language is written now, we would be required to first apply the money to apparently Trunk Highway 60 and then later to bridges, and that if it was the legislature's desire that we first apply any money given to District 7 from the bonding package to bridges, that wasn't the way the language read now.
Thank you. Representative Morrow?
No, I understand that we're going to have a greater discussion about all of these, but I just wanted it to be on the record that that's the problem with the language, and that was the clarification that I understood all sides were trying to reach.
Right. yeah, Representative Morrow, you're correct. This is these fixes here are nothing that we've never done in the past, where we go back and we fix certain things, because it doesn't matter how tight you write law, sometimes we all know that there's a little twist here and there, and we should have the ability to, fix our mistakes. And we're just not being given that opportunity. So thank you, Ms. Parker. Oh, wait a minute, Ms. Parker. The next one is about design build, so we might as well.
Mr. Chair and members, so that the committee is aware, there are a couple of provisions relating to Chapter 152 that were adopted previously. They were subsumed under some motions of taking in larger sections of overlapping provisions. Just so you're aware, the debt service surcharge administration, which is on page R99, the compressed natural gas tax rate change, the typo fix, is on page R103, and the change to the regional rail transit funding is on page R105. It's my understanding that right now those are in the those would go into the conference committee report.
All right. Well, members, on the compressed natural gas, we already know that that is a veto item, because that's been vetoed once. Ms. Parker, do you have any I know that the debt service surcharge is something that I think everyone agrees to. What about the Regional Rail Authority transit funding? Never mind, Ms. Parker, that's fine. That provision is also in our 07 bill, so we'll find out the Regional Rail Authority transit funding. So. Chair Hortman.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we take all three of these provisions out, so that we have no Chapter 152 language in this bill.
Does everyone understand that motion?
Yes.
All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
We're doing all.
Mr. Burris, you have on your...
all going out.
Well, we'll come back to design build in a minute or two.
Trees.
Yeah. Okay. So there's something already in the... Members, before before we go to design build or before we get to the Mr. Burris's list here, because there's a couple three provisions left on that, there is one issue on the open issues from Ms. Berzosky's list, and one of those is Senator Jungbauer's redefinition of passenger automobile. Senator Jungbauer, if you want to move that, I think that most of the House members are well aware what this provision is.
Well, Mr. Chair, is there any controversy that anybody sees there for the governor?
I don't know that this was on their – this was not on their list, Senator Jungbauer.
Well,
and just so that we're clear and on the record, this isn't a tax increase. This is just gaining the appropriate amount of fee from some of these vehicles that are currently maybe skirting the edge of the law.
Well, and more importantly, Mr. Chair and members, it's creating a line of distinction between passenger use and commercial use on vehicles so that everybody's operating under the appropriate class with the appropriate DOT regulations, and that it doesn't potentially bring passenger-operated vehicles into a commercial inspection because they're running the wrong license plates. Mm-hmm. So it's a clarification. So I would move that we place that section into the conference report.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does prevail. Members, why don't we take up Mr. Burris's list here now, and we'll work down through that, and we'll come back and get the design build issue off the table. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, on the staff clarifications handout, item number one has already been dealt with. Item number two is a provision that has already been enacted. It was might have been just posted this morning on the governor's website. This deals with the long-term disability parking provision that's just on the Senate side on page R34.
And provision number three?
Mr. Chair, provision number three has been sent to the governor. It's the same language. This has to do with requiring a reinstatement fee of $30 and driver's license exams when a license is revoked for controlled substances offenses. The language is the same between what is in the policy bill here and what was sent to the governor. And
okay, so we don't have to do that then.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Dibble.
Oh, just to be clear, we have not yet moved. These are not a part of the conference committee report yet, so we don't need to take any action, or do we need to delete them?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, number two, item number two has been passed by the committee already. I need to double-check on item number three.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, should I make a motion to delete the previously adopted language?
Okay.
Mr. Burris wasn't sure about number three.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, item number three was also adopted by the conference committee.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so, well, then, can I make that one motion? Delete both of the previously adopted. Or do we know about item number?
Well, it's like this, Senator Dibble. Either way, we can take item number three out of the bill because if it's going to the governor's desk, he's going to take care of that on its own, and we might as well get rid of it. So it's a little less, it's one less thing we'll have to try to explain to somebody. Senator Dibble, you're moving to take those provisions out.
If I can make that as one motion, that kosher? All right. So moved.
Okay. Sure. Right. On the double motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Mr. Burris, you also have a railway walkway amendment here. Was there a technical fix or something we needed to do with that?
Mr. Chair and members, could we jump back to that? I'll take a moment to confer with Ms. Berzosky.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Members, I want to move to the design build now, and
doing this does not take.
There's several different trains of thought on the design build. There's a few sections that appears that MnDOT would live with, And then there's several provisions that they're adamantly opposed to, and we know what those are, and one of them is the cap on the program. We can either put all the design build in or take it out or maybe adopt a few of the non-controversial things, and I would open it up to discussion. Representative Morrow? Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we adopt the non-controversial provisions that MnDOT has agreed to. As the public probably knows, the Hastings Bridge is scheduled to be reconstructed in 2010, and the department has indicated they'd like to use the design-build process. And I think any steps that we can take to bring more transparency to the design-build process would be welcomed by the public. So, and if MnDOT has indicated they are okay with some of the provisions of it, then I don't see why we wouldn't adopt them.
All right, Ms. Parker, if you could come back to the table, and if you've got your side-by-side, maybe you can tell us which provisions those were. Ms. Bierzowski is also going through the list that was given to us earlier. Oh, Representative Hausman, is this your amendment or?
Yes.
We talked about last night. They said they didn't have one, that the next is the next month. This is, except they said that didn't do the 10. They said that one didn't do the 10. It didn't do 10?
Representative Hausman, what had happened was Mr. Burris drafted up that A71 amendment that with some of the provisions that MnDOT had agreed to, and we just need to get some copies. So we'll come back to that in a minute. I think it'd be easier if we just did it by amendment instead of walking through section by section, unless you have a different idea. Unless you don't want to do any design build.
I sort of took myself out of it because, first of all, it's not my issue, but what I understood is that there had been an agreement about 10 items. And I thought there had been amendment drafted about the 10, but I don't think we have that now.
Yeah, we do.
Mr. Burris, you did draft up an amendment, and we're getting copies of it made, so is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So why don't we just hold off on the design build for just a second then, and as soon as we get that amendment back, we'll adopt it. Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A17 amendment. We can discuss that now.
Okay. We'll get it passed out. Go ahead, Senator Stephen. Start.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this concerns the language in both bills regarding Lafayette Bridge. Senator Metzen on our side worked very hard on this provision, and what it essentially said was that the language in the conference report said that since the Lafayette Bridge is going to be reconstructed, the department should insert footings into the river to plan for future transit. And Senator Metzen has worked with the governor's office to come up with compromise language that the governor is willing to live with, is my understanding. So what the A17 amendment says is that when there are plans for the replacement or reconstruction of a trunk highway bridge in the metro area, the Commissioner of Transportation shall work with the Met Council to identify any feasible transit infrastructure or improvements in the corridor. And I think this will have a benefit not only for the Lafayette Bridge, but also for all the other bridges in the metropolitan area that will be reconstructed more sooner than was previously planned because of the transportation override. It certainly will help, not hurt, with the Hastings reconstruction. And like I mentioned, this is very important to the Lafayette Bridge, so I'd ask for member support.
Does this apply to all bridges now?
In the metro. It just says you have to.
And Ms. Parker, did MnDOT, to my understanding, this is all agreed to?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sieben, yes, except that the language on line 1.7 has been changed, and actually we wouldn't want to wait until the design of a bridge began if we were going to include a transit element in it. We would want to start with the planning of it so that it would start earlier than that, because you have to do planning and scoping and environmental work before you get to design. So if you would just say planning, that would mean we would start at the earliest point when it was, that's which would be the best place to start talking about it before anything is decided yet.
Ms. Parker, then on line 1.6, can we put in conjunction with the planning and then comma and leave the rest of it?
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be all right, but I think it's important to insert the word planning because that's the very beginning of the process.
Senator Dibble.
Well, Mr. Chair, isn't planning dealt with down on line 11, starting line 11, subdivision 2?
Oh, of course. Of course it is.
Mr. Chair.
That's for the overall process.
Senator Dibble.
This language, as I understand, was written in the governor's office by the governor's staff.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Parker.
As far as I know, this language, I don't know where this language was written. I am in possession of language that was, in fact, written in the governor's office because I was there when it was written, and it is not the same as this language in Subdivision 1, but the spirit of it is certainly the same, and it basically embodies the agreement as I understand it. Mm-hmm. And I am not quibbling with whether or not this should be adopted. I believe it should be. I'm only expressing the feeling that we all want to start discussing how to combine highways and transit at the earliest possible opportunity, and that is in the planning process.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think
we should. I think I'm going to move the amendment, this amendment, on line 1.6 after the word the, put planning, comma, and that will put planning in the immediate, and that would take care of it. And they'll do the same thing that we want to do, and I don't think it's going to hurt.
Design for construction.
Okay. Planning and design.
Representative Nelson, staff says that we need an or after planning.
Okay.
On the Nelson motion, Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if this might be a friendly amendment. On line 1.11, where it says the commissioner and the chair shall, I wonder if that, does that mean you?
No, that means the chair
of the Met Council.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Never mind then.
Yep. Okay, on first on the Nelson motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Further discussion on the A-17 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Sieben renews her motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Okay. Members, we're not going to do a design build, any design build. We'll just leave it all out. It's much too complicated to get into right now. Was there Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members,
Yesterday, the conference committee adopted some railroad walkway language that hadn't been seen by council staff, and we've noticed a couple of technical issues with that, and would like to request some leeway in making technical changes in getting those provisions into the conference committee report.
Senator Dibble would make that motion, and it's just so that staff cleans it up, gets the comments and all that in the right spot. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Mr. Burris. Ms. Burzynski.
Do you have anything? Some ice cream.
First, I want to ask council, are there other unresolved issues yet? Senator, Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to just call members' attention to one thing that I just became aware of yesterday. On R86, we didn't move the credit card payment study. On the very first time we met, I distributed a packet of information, and we didn't move that. Unless people think that nothing is happening in regard to that, I thought I should call members' attention to the fact that House File 3486, which was the 2007 legislation that the Senate passed and then the House passed late yesterday on the House floor, in fact, has that language in. And it is obviously, I knew nothing about this issue until about two days ago when the South St. Paul office came to see me. And since then, I confess to great confusion about how and why this is as controversial as it is. I have some history that suggests back in the 1980s, local governments began accepting credit cards and assessing fees back to their citizens. And since then, we have been trying to move in that direction. And DNR does it, and we do it online. But for some reason, in these particular offices, they still have not been able to arrive at anything satisfactory. And so the language that was actually adopted in House File 3486 does, in my opinion, put us 2 years out again, because our dates are that they, I think they begin by February 2009, there's a proposal, and then by January 2010, RFPs. So we're off in the distance a couple of years to resolve this issue. It's just confusing to me to understand why something that I'm assuming everyone would just acknowledge is by now kind of a customer-friendly thing that you'd like to assume that state government could do, but in this case hasn't been resolved. I thought it had something to do with the computer system that we weren't funding, but I've been told that that is not necessarily the case, but there is a very great difference of opinion between the department and at least this one office in South St. Paul about this. And I'm calling it to your attention because we didn't adopt the language, though it was here, but in fact, if you voted for 3486 on the House and Senate floor yesterday, it is in fact enacted into law. That bill is on the way to the governor. That's the one that I believe they removed Real ID. And whether there is a feeling that we want to try to fix this by repeal or by changing timelines or different directions, it actually happened in another bill, and it was something we didn't act on in ours. That's I don't necessarily know protocol about this.
Well, you've stumped the chump. I don't know either. Representative Hausman, we can you can move the language for the.
Well, the language has already now, it's on its way to the governor. It just appeared in a different bill. We didn't enact ours, and so I didn't know if that was sentiment that this group really didn't intend to move it. So we didn't move it as a conference committee, but in fact, I'm just telling you, in another bill, it happened.
In both of these, right?
And so, do we feel comfortable making all those offices wait another 2 years for better customer service, or do we want to do something about the language adopted in another bill? And I don't even know. Mm-hmm.
Senator Devil.
So, just to be clear, I think I know the answer. So this language is on its way to the governor's desk.
Right. On page R86, we
right.
had the language.
Right.
But we didn't act, which I assume means this conference committee didn't want to approve that language because nobody moved it.
Oh, well, I had not yet actually formed a full opinion, so I just thought we were going to come back to it.
On the first day, you may recall that I referenced a credit card task force that already reported to the legislature January 17, 2007. So presumably in 2006 or something like that, there must have been legislation. Mm-hmm. So we directed them. There was a task force. And now it feels as though we're right back to the study language.
So
nothing gets us to the point of customer service.
So you're, Mr. Chair...
If I had my druthers, I would repeal this language. I just don't know if I can do that in this bill when it happened in another bill.
Mr. Chair, maybe a question for counsel. I mean, because the issue, as I understand it, is we know we can do what we thought we couldn't do as a result of that study. And so to launch another study, we're delaying for 2 years what we know we can do. Question for counsel is, is it the case that when the legislature passes two different things that deal with the same subject or the same section of law, is the last thing that gets to the governor's desk that prevails? So we can actually do something.
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Dill, before we get too far into this discussion, I think that we should hear from some of the players involved, because I think it's going to become very clear what we need to do. And first, would like Ms. McCormick to testify on behalf of the department, and then we can have the folks come up from South St. Paul and Mr. Hurst.
I think we shouldn't have done it because it's another study. It's another study.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Pat McCormick, Driver and Vehicle Services. The study that's in this transportation policy bill was a proposal that the county's association and the Deputy Registrar Association put forward. Although we did do a study that was looked at in 2007, things have changed in some degree in terms of the fact that there are two major credit card companies that are now talking about allowing motor vehicle agencies to possibly allow for credit card payments with the customer paying the service fee, which is unusual because usually the credit card companies make the retailer or the vendor pay the customer service fee. And as you may remember, that was the sticking point with the legislation that was proposed, because it would require a large sum of money even if we only dealt with transactions under $1,000, because as you know, when you're paying motor vehicle sales tax and registration taxes, those are, they can be extremely expensive propositions if you're adding a 2.5% customer service charge to it. And so at the time, the study was proposed again. Since that time, as I said, MasterCard and American Express, as well as Discover, are all saying they will do that. The big concern has been that Visa, which is the major player for credit cards that are most owners have, credit card owners have that credit card, would be need to be in the mix. And so what we talked about is the fact that we would have a task force, and this proposal would require a task force again to bring in the credit card companies and get their financial rules so that we really have the information. At the time, the credit card companies were not forthcoming in that first task force. They would not provide us with the detail of information that we needed. We have been, since I started with DVS in 2000, we have been trying to find a way to make this accessible to customers, but we cannot, the state really cannot be picking up the tab if customers want to be using a credit card. But we need to have a level playing field. Our agents, 173 deputy registrars and 125 driver's license agents, in some parts of the state, even our driver's license agents are the face of state government because our examiners basically just deal with testing, and the driver license agent is the one that does the driver license applications. In the case of motor vehicles, they are the face of state government in terms of face-to-face transactions, and we have been trying to work cooperatively with the deputies, and we 2 years ago at the time of the task force, I set out rules in terms of the deputies and DL agents. The only deputies or DL agents that could offer credit card transactions would be if we could ensure the security of their system in terms and the ensure the accuracy and financial accuracy of their system that they would use, and they would need to absorb the costs because our customers need to have the same costs at any office they go to. We cannot have one deputy charging a service fee here and then another one charging a service fee there. And so we have talked about doing an RFP, leveraging the state business in terms of trying to get the best offer we can get with vendors, vetting those vendors to ensure that they are a reputable company and that all the security that we need in the system, and to ensure that no private financial data or transactional data is on their systems. We need to ensure that take place, and we need to, and the Department of Finance has said that we would need to do an RFP and have that come through the department. We cannot have separate deputies doing that because almost all of our agents are part of the are working through a state depository, and so that's why I had agreed that the division and our commissioner also supported us saying that this language that's in this current proposal would be workable. I do not support any deputy putting a system on that we have not approved and that is not consistent among all of our agents. We have to have consistency. We need to have a level playing field. Many people go to their deputy and will get letters because they think they're our staff. And they aren't our staff, but we need to speak with one voice and have one set of fees that we're all operating by. And so I feel very strongly that the association has been working with us, that we can work this out. The 2010 date is in there only because if we have trouble getting financial rules, that may slow us down, but that's the date that it says we have to have it completed. Our thoughts would be that we would do it more quickly than that, and we would be able to accomplish it more quickly. But we need, if we're going to do it, I know it's been a long haul and that the deputies are very impatient about it, but we have to do it right if we're going to do it.
Mr. Hurst.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jim Hurst. I represent the association, the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. As Director McCormick stated, the Deputy Registrar Association, also in conjunction with the Intercounty, the Metro Intercounty Association, and also Washington County specifically, have been working collaboratively on language that is acceptable to all parties. This language that you see in the conference committee reflects those agreements. Furthermore, the language first appeared last year in 2007. As you all know, the time ran out before the omnibus bill in 2007 was presented. So we were delayed certainly a year because of that. The language was updated this year to reflect that. There were some other modifications made to it to specifically include a situation such as what Director McCormick has described or what the South St. Paul office has discovered with credit card companies now, or at least two or three of them, being willing to pass that convenience fee on to the customer. That only occurred, I believe it was earlier this year. Prior to that, they would not budge on that issue. We certainly appreciate the fact that the credit card companies are headed in that direction, but quite frankly, we want to work collegiately with the department. We certainly want to make sure everything is done right, but by the same token, I do not wish to stand in the way of one of my members of my association should they wish to petition the committee on this matter. As it stands, we do support the existing language, but we will certainly allow our member to come forward and press their point on this issue.
Representative Hallisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm assuming your clients are hoping for speedy resolution for the purpose of customer-friendly relationships as well. I would think that would be a priority for your clients.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hausman, we certainly want a resolution to this and done properly, and certainly we look to conduct all of our business as speedily as possible for the benefit of the consumer.
And Mr. Chair and members, I don't know if you read the packet, but my confusion, this is mostly confusion, is when I see the timeline and when I see the word study, it looks as though people really haven't resolved some of these issues. But if you read the proposal from Nationwide Payment Solutions, they indicated that Ms. McCormick had two concerns, that the solution be the same for all offices and that the credit card data security be secured. And so they propose that they would offer virtual terminals and magnetic card readers for all customer service windows at all deputy registrar and license agents' offices, regardless of size, no monthly or transaction fees, a convenience fee of 2.45% with a minimum of $1.75 per transaction, and then signage that informs customers of the convenience fee, and then they go into the second concern of security. The reason I mention this is it strikes me that really a lot of this work is done, and I sort of think we're kind of ready for the the request for proposal, that the industry has already done all of this. So what just confuses me is the language that everyone, that the other players have agreed to, puts this out to the year 2010. And if you're willing to hear the office that brought this to me, that the South St. Paul office, for any comment they may have, mm-hmm. I've certainly become a believer.
Well, if you want to come join us at the table, that'd be great. Senator Jungbauer?
Mr. Chair, I was going to say that Ms. McCormick makes a good point. Credit card companies don't always tell you the full meal deal up front, but if the testimony becomes much longer, I don't know about the rest of you, but, you know, I got 3 hours of sleep last night. I'm hanging on by my toes on one of these kind of lengthy conversations, so keep it in bite-sized morsels we can understand, please.
Definitely. Welcome to the committee.
Thank
please
you.
State your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gay Smith, and I am the Director of Operation for the Deputy Registrar and located in the city of South St. Paul. And we have had a petition at our office for a number of months. We have had angry customers. We've had customers with speeding or parking tickets or the tickets for not having tabs on their car. We just recently had an individual in the office that wanted to pay with her credit card and couldn't. She said, I can write you a check, but it's no good. And she said, I need to put this on a payment. And I just explained to her, please sign our petition. Our petition basically has the sense of if you choose to make your method of payment in this respect and you're willing to pay a convenience fee for that, you can sign this petition and we will bring your concerns to our legislators. And that's one of the reasons we're here. When the credit card task force was done, and it was done very well, there were members of the city, counties, and I do believe it was put together by Deputy Commissioner Mary Ellis and Pat McCormick. They did an excellent job, very thorough, and I was very impressed with the document. So what our office did is we took the document and we looked at, read everything, did the recommendations that the committee put together, and there were seven recommendations on that task force. And the first one was to be allowed to increase your fees. Unfortunately, our fees are set in statute, and we are unable to raise our filing fee. So obviously that wasn't an option for us. What we did find out through that was that several counties, I think there were 15 counties, and 9 of those 15 raised their fees for the ones that absorbed the credit card fees. So there were some counties that had $300,000 in credit card fees that they absorbed through their county. And what they were doing is then the next year they would raise that fee, say if it's at a county park or for a camping facility. They would raise that fee then for the next year to help incorporate those costs. Well, to me that just didn't seem right. So I said, well, you know, how can we continue to curb this cost of our local and our government fees going up? So we thought, well, let's go to number two. We went down to the second one, which is the financial and the reporting aspect. As far as the reporting and financials at a deputy registrar office, we take in the funds at the front counter, and we have the ability to respond to an NSF contract that the Deputy Registrar Association and the state of Minnesota have gotten into an agreement on how we can do our collections for bad checks. So when we put that collection process together, part of the collection process for a person writing a check at your front counter requires driver's license number, plate number, addresses, phone numbers, full names, so that if that check comes back as a non-sufficient fund, we have avenues to go after, which I believe one of those is in a driver's license suspension. And so we figured that would be fine, so we went with the NSF contract, the reporting practices. Now with all the identity theft and security issues, banks are telling the customers, don't put your address on your check blanks. Don't put your phone numbers on your check blanks. Don't put your driver's license number on your check blanks. So we are now finding that we have customers that are handing us a check blank with M. Smith, and that's it. We are really struggling, and they do not want to give us that information because they said, well, you take that in, and you have people at your counter that can see that. So now it's getting to be an issue of the information we are getting from our customers because our customers are getting more well-informed. So, again, we went to the next step, number three. I'm going to have to do a refresher here. One of the steps on number three was to come up with a new reporting practice, an ACH-type system that would take that money out faster, whether it's an e-check-type system, like if you go to a Walmart and you get your check back and it goes through that system. And I looked at that, and that was quite costly also to implement, but it is a cost of doing business. So we looked, would it increase our being able to get that money faster? No, it does not. The NSF still is an issue. All you're doing is signing on the little piece of paper that you are agreeing to this contract, and it's another NSF. So we implemented another ACH plan that where we take it in and we ACH through accounting systems, and we implemented that, and that's a 24-hour turnaround time that we can have money directly deposited into the state's depository for the withdrawal by the Treasury Department. Then we went on and it said to develop partnerships and to work with companies that would help incur these costs and provide better customer service. So we also implemented that procedure from the Credit Card Task Force. We contacted the credit card companies, as MasterCard did have in the Credit Card Task Force, had a pilot program going for the convenience fee being able to be charged back. But they were very restrictive, and I can understand Ms. McCormick's issue with that because you would have to have one line. It just wasn't user-friendly. So when we discussed our issues with them, they said, well, would you be willing to, you know, work on a system and put something together for us that would work for government entities? So we developed that partnership, and we also started building a program and developing it. The issue that I had was that I don't believe as a government entity we should take any type of convenience fee, period. It's not our money. It's not something that we should be taking from the customer. That should be between the customer and the credit card company. So when we looked at developing this, I said we should be no different than if you went over to your ATM machine and you wanted to pay your bill, but you're not going to have to pay those high exorbitant ATM machines, whether they're $2.50 or higher or lower. So what we looked at was we just want our initial fees that we can pay to the state of Minnesota and the filing fee that we keep locally to do our cost of doing business. So by putting that together, we said, you take that. That is a contract between you and the credit card company. And the customer, if they see that convenience fee at $2 and they decide they don't want to pay that, they have the chance of opting out, going and getting a check or cash. And sure. Then they would have to meet the sure, check Horton. Requirements.
Mr. Chair, I just have the sneaking suspicion that this issue is more complex than we can resolve in this conference committee. And I don't feel that we're in a position now to repeal something or undo something that's in House File 3686 that's headed to the governor. I understand your concerns, Representative Hausman. I understand this is a very complex issue. But I don't feel that this conference committee at this time should be taking action different from the bill that just passed on the floor, because I'm not clear that we have enough information and that that's within the realm of our job here today. Just me.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been here about not quite a year and a half, and of all the people that I've worked with and developed trusts, I think I have to say that Pat McCormick is one of the highest level of trust I have with anybody, and she's expressed a number of concerns, almost not to say that you guys are a rogue group out there doing your own thing, but it almost seems like you're heading in that direction. So I do have some concerns about that you are developing this on your own, and maybe this certainly, I believe, should be coming from the state. And
correct.
So I guess I'll just leave it at that.
And I will say that is exactly right. They have done this on their own, including contacting and negotiating with credit card companies. Now, why would somebody do that? On a daily basis, facing customers from morning to night, and having confusion, frustration, anger, and no sense of resolution in sight. And the study language after a credit card study, after a credit card task force, we put another study in law. And I think if I were a customer service agency, I'd start to say, gosh, what are my options? What are my options? Because in this case, there doesn't seem to be a speedy option from the state. And
well,
so we're...
Go ahead, Senator, or Representative Hausman, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, please.
No, I was rambling.
Oh, Senator Dibble.
Thanks. I read the language, finally. and this isn't a study. I mean, I'm extremely sympathetic. I met with the deputy registrars during the interim, and it seems incredible to me that we can't take credit cards. But I think Pat McCormick has articulated well that they've been trying hard, and the frustration is primarily with the credit card companies. And it sounds like there was, that they're going to make use of the study that they just concluded. And I don't actually see this as a study, but it's to develop a legislative proposal, using all the information we have to date, that will either, finance the costs across a broad a body of individuals or create the convenience fee. But it sounds like, I'm sympathetic to the date issue, and maybe we could change the date. But this isn't a study, as I see it, but it's directing the agency to bring a package, a legislative package forward for enactment next year that then would be implemented.
And, Mr. Chair,
I did
visit with Ms. McCormick in recess, and mm-hmm. she has told me that they think it may not take 2 years. And as a way of maybe getting it off the plate of this group, what I may do is ask the whole group to come into my office and see if I can help the local office resolve this
well,
in less than 2 years.
Representative Hausman, I think you're on to something here, because it's February 15th of next year that Ms. McCormick and her group has to have something to show us, and I believe it's 010 to put the RFP out. We may be able to expedite the whole thing. I don't think we can do it right now. But my commitment has been to the deputy registers for a long, long time, through the fee wars and everything else, is that we will take that report next year and we will make action. We can't do it now. So, Representative Hausman, if you want to be the lead in the House on this issue, I can take it here in the Senate. We'll just get her done. But, Ms. Smith.
Mr. Chair, just one thing, and members of the committee, is that, Representative Hausman, you've been our voice, thank you, and so have you. And we are really getting beat up out there. And I think the hard part for us is that we did get a legal opinion from Mike Hatch to look at the legalities, the method of payments that we take in our offices and at the cities and counties. Those are a business choice. And as long as we are collecting the fees for the local government and the fees for the state governments, and we're not collecting any fees and the customer is being informed, no different than the ATM machine that we did adopt in our office. They go to that ATM machine. We had 167 uses off our ATM machine with $16,000 going through it. And out of that $16,000 and 167 transactions, 155 of them were credit card usage, which is immediate high-interest cash advances for our customers. And that really worries me. We don't want to put them any further behind.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Well, Ms. Smith, at this time, I just don't believe that we can resolve this issue. We have to be out of this room in the next 35 minutes, and we have many things to go through. We do realize that this is a huge issue. for our deputy registers. And as I said earlier, that Representative Hausman, myself, and a lot of other members around this table and in the legislature have been champions on your behalf.
Absolutely.
And we're willing to do that again. It's just that we're kind of late in the day right now, and I apologize.
I'm still going to try to even do it before February.
Okay, that's fine. Representative Hausman, if you come together with a plan and we can get everybody around the campfire, I'll be right there. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
Members, there's just a couple of items left to talk about here. And I believe that we need to make a choice between graduated driver's license, booster seats, or primary seat belt.
Mr. Chair.
Did Representative...
Well, I just wanted to mention, I think that one of the conditions laid out in the governor's letter is just frankly not a possibility. He would like a strong bipartisan vote on the safety provisions, and I just... I think that that's somewhat unrealistic and shouldn't necessarily be a criteria. We have 9 supporters for primary seatbelt. That's 1/5 of the caucus, the Republican caucus. But I don't think that that means it's not good public policy, and I think the governor should
speak up, Madam Chair. I can't hear you down here. If you're talking to the rest of us, I can't hear you. Thank you.
Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that we go with the primary seat belt, and then also the... Maybe is this appropriate motion to make?
All three of these provisions are in the conference committee right now. The appropriate would be to strike one of the three.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we strike the booster seat provision and also change the teen driving restriction to a parent opt-in.
On that motion, I think Representative Norton is here for a specific reason. If you'd want to join us at the table. Representative, I think you might have a strong opinion here.
I do very much, and if you just bear with me for just a moment. My bill is the only bill of the three that you're talking about this afternoon that went through the full process in both the House and the Senate over this last year and over the last 2 years. I was really disappointed to see the governor's letter, and I think he must have been a little cranky after your meeting this morning, and it's reflected in the verbiage here. He wanted a bipartisan bill, and he got one with this bill. The graduated driver's license bill was heard in the House. It was heard in 5 committees, and in several of those committees, there were efforts to have an opt-in or an opt-out. And it failed every time, handedly. And it was suggested to be removed, this provision removed from the bill on the floor, and that also failed handedly. And so I have both Republican and Democratic authors on the bill and supporters on the bill. And that is also true, I believe, of the Senate side, which I think former Senator Tom Neville, a Republican, carried it through last year, and then it was readdressed this year, and I think had wide bipartisan support in the Senate as well. It's my understanding that law enforcement is very concerned with an opt-in, opt-out provision on this type of law, that they don't want that. And I guess when I first saw this, I thought he was even suggesting an opt-out for seatbelts until I reread it. I mean, we don't let people opt in and out for seatbelts or car seats or drinking and driving or paying your taxes. We just don't do that. Laws are implemented to be upheld. And this is a good law. I did check. Of the 46 states that have some sort of provisional license, not one of them has an opt-in or opt-out. It's law. And, in fact, I would also let you know that this is one of the milder of the 46 GDL bills in the United States at this time. It could have been wait till you're 17 to get the license. It could have been a full year with the provisions that we have in it. But we chose just 6 months, and because we're very cognizant of the libertarian bent in the state of Minnesota. So we did the best we could to save lives, and I think that's the bill you have before you. So I do have very strong feelings, Senator, that it should stand as it was written, and that we need to make the argument to the governor that it has strong bipartisan support in both the House and the Senate. And that's it has bipartisan attractors and detractors, quite honestly, but more attractors, which is why it passed.
Representative Morrow, did you have a...
It's not on this point. It's on the other half of the senator's motion.
Okay. Senator Jungbauer?
Well, on this half of the motion, I guess I would not be in favor of the motion because I just see no benefit whatsoever to having a graduated driver's license with an opt-in or opt-out. I mean, I'm really trying to vision that we're going to give them the get-out-of-jail-free card like we get. You just have your parents co-sign, and you just flash it to the cop and say, I opted out of these statutes. I don't quite understand that theory.
We needed to have the discussion, and it sounds like the conference committee does not like the opt-out provision. So, Senator Olsen, if you'd maybe restate your motion.
I'll modify my motion to remove the booster seats.
Representative Morrow.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to speak against this. I'm reading the governor's letter of May 6th, and Senator, while I fully believe that you were told something in the hallway, we have not had anybody sit at this table and tell us 2 out of 3. We have not had anyone at this table come and tell us that booster seats weren't, the booster seats preservation wasn't enhancing safety. In fact, we heard it does enhance safety earlier today. I'm looking at this letter, and I see nothing that tells me we have to take out a certain number of provisions. So I'm going to have to speak against the motion because I don't see an argument that we need to take it out.
Representative Morrow, there is someone here who can speak on behalf of the governor. In that regard, I'd rather not put this gentleman through that if... Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, how did you modify your...
Basically just striking the booster seat.
Okay.
Commissioner Campion.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. How are you? I had conversations with the governor's office. I'm sorry, Michael Campion, Commissioner of Public Safety. Whatever transpired last night, Mr. Chair, there is no prerequisite on the part of the governor. There is no prerequisite to have only 2 of 3 provisions. There just simply is not. Whatever was communicated to whoever last night, there was a misunderstanding, there was whatever. But it's pretty clear that there is no requirement, prerequisite for the governor to have only 2 of the 3 provisions. Well, the attempt in the letter, the language in the letter that talks about the recommendation for teen driving is only that, and that is a recommendation. A recommendation to attempt to make the bill more attractive from a bipartisan perspective. That is not, again, not a requirement on the part of the governor, only a suggestion or a recommendation. I certainly can't dispute Representative Norton's comments on her bill.
No, I had asked Senator Olsen to make that motion to try to reach some of that bipartisan support, Commissioner. And, you know, the facts are this. The seatbelt provision is the one that is the major hang-up for, and that is bipartisan, both sides. And I don't believe that the seat or the GDL or the booster seat is actually what is causing a lot of heartburn for the minority of both caucuses, or I should say all 4 caucuses of members, minority of members. I'm not talking about the Republicans. I think it's just there's more people that want to vote for a seatbelt bill than there are that don't. but it's bipartisan, both sides, for and against. That's what all the hand-wringing has been about. But if we put a bill on the governor's desk with all three safety initiatives in it and he signs it, I think that would be a grand day for the state of Minnesota. So, members, I'm with Senator Olsen, if you would withdraw your motion, I'm comfortable with sending all three there. I do believe that we've made enough gestures to public safety, vehicle services, Department of Transportation, that we want a bill, and I think we've proven it by taking 99.9% of the controversial items out.
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw my motion.
Thank you, Representative Earhart. Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, former Speaker Swigum used to say if you get one person from the other side, we always call it bipartisan. And I'm going to vote for this, so you can call it bipartisan.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only question I have is, and I guess it's a concern, is from the language and the letter and the language from Commissioner Campion, his recommendations here to us, and I remember reading similar language last year and then getting veto messages that we read that those recommendations that he had were part of his veto reasons he vetoed stuff. So that's just a concern, and I just want to express it. And I hope that isn't what I'm reading here, and I hope I'm wrong. But I guess I'd be concerned if this bill gets vetoed. And as I said earlier today, I want it to get passed and I want it to get signed and become law, even though I don't support all the provisions in it. I think it's good legislation. But I just don't want to see it coming back and have to go through the process again when, you know, we're passing something over his recommendation. And I just want that out there.
All right. Thank you, Representative. Commissioner, I have a question. In regards to the teen driving issue and the parental opt-out, now, it's my understanding that nobody else does this. It's been kicked around in several different legislatures and kicked out. If that was part of the bill, I'm just curious, how would you be able to enforce it?
Mr. Chair, talking to Pat McCormick, there is an avenue to enforce that. We when a law enforcement officer runs somebody's driver's license, if they have an opt-out clause in request, it would show up on the driver's license query that would then alert law enforcement that, in fact, there was an opt-out provision chosen, if you will, at the time of that young person's driver's license application and issuance.
Commissioner, I don't know if we need to load up Ms. McCormick's computers anymore because they're already on their last leg again. So, Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, I guess that gives us a great opportunity since the computer probably wouldn't handle all that extra stuff. Maybe if we put the opt-out clause in with an effective date of, say, 2012 or 13, once we have the new computer system up and running, I could probably live with that.
I'm glad your tongue was planted firmly in your cheek. Is there any further discussion on the conference committee report? Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Ms. McCormick reminds me that there is an issue. I'm sorry. Okay, we're leaving pretty soon. That's all. Ms. Berezovsky, if you could state where the provision is, but there's a provision in here that the governor's office did have an issue with, and that deals with the deputy commissioner being a licensed engineer and also a designated chief engineer. And trying to get along with the governor here, we've agreed to take that out of the bill. And Ms. Berezovsky, if you could tell us where it was at, I'd make that motion.
Mr. Chair and members, it is on page R65, Senate language, section 87.
Does everybody understand the motion?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I know we're trying to get out. I'll keep it very brief, and I won't be voting against it, but I do object to it. 49 states members do this in one way, form, or another, chief engineer and or professional engineer in the upper ranks. And, in fact, MnDOT had this itself. This bill has been heard both sides. It's moved through committees on both sides. There was agreement with MnDOT on this language until very, very recently. I was hoping we could keep it in, but I know we have a standalone bill, so I won't vote against doing so.
All right. Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Dibble, you had a motion you want to make? Or?
Oh, sure. Mr. Chair, I'll move the conference committee reform as amended.
With the instruction to staff that if there's any technical, purely technical periods, commas, that type of thing to clean up.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, members, and the conference committee is adjourned.
Mr. Chair, do you have to stick around this
night? I'm going to just...
I want to make sure all members...
Members.
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 Members.